Welcome to this ICMA Sustainable Communities podcast. ICMA is the premier local government leadership and management organization. The ICMA Sustainable Communities Initiative strengthens local government's capacity to meet their sustainability goals. For more information, visit icma.org.
Hi, I'm Catherine Takai from ICMA's Center for Sustainable Communities. In an effort to learn more about how small and rural communities have leveraged their resources to pursue economic development goals, today I'm speaking with two representatives from the Kendi-Ohi County and City of Willmar Economic Development Commission in Minnesota about their efforts to promote a local agriculturally based renewable energy industry. I am pleased to introduce the Kendi-Ohi County and City of Willmar EDC's Executive Director, Steve Rehnquist, and Agriculture and Renewable Energy Specialist, Leroy Lee Peterson. Stephen Lee, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, Catherine. We've been looking forward to our conversation today.
To begin, please tell us a bit about your community in Kendi-Ohi County.
Kendi-Ohi County is unique because it's really a transition county from tourist haven of fishing lakes and woods over to a rich farming prairie soil. Very often, of course, before roads were here, the railroad was really the only transportation.
Can you tell me a bit about your organization, the Kendi-Ohi County and City of Willmar Economic Development Commission, and your role as the Agricultural and Renewable Energy Specialist?
Well, the governing boards are comprised of both Willmar City and Kendi-Ohi County board members. The EDC is a separate taxing authority and not necessarily dependent on funds from either Willmar City or Kendi-Ohi County to do its work. This helps facilitate an approach that, you know, we can benefit the county as a whole while recognizing that Willmar brings a very real contribution.
Agribusiness is a driver to the economy. It's the largest single source of cash transfer into Kendi-Ohi County by far. And it was appropriate that we do everything we could to maintain our strong agricultural presence and look for ways to find even greater profits for the producers and some value-added opportunities, which, of course, could find themselves in the renewable resource field. So that was the thoughts behind the creation of the position within the county.
Can you tell me more about the history of ag-based renewable energy in your community?
Probably the grand success story is ethanol, and the EDC staff and the Ag and Renewable Energy Committee was instrumental in its success. Of course, it was something that developed in a very large region of the U.S., but the people here on the committee and the leadership had the foresight to recognize something that really was going to be good, not only for the community, but the region as well. Of course, a growing crop is an excellent way to collect solar energy and puts it in a commodity that has a worldwide pricing structure, easy to transport, straightforward, proven technology. A lot of today's focus, of course, has shifted to environmental flavors of reduce, reuse, and recycle. And the challenge is still to make the renewable industry initiatives economically viable and sustainable. Kendi-Ohi County has an abundance of highly productive land. We have an excellent, extensive transportation infrastructure, good supportive industries, and really a willing and very capable workforce. And I think we're on the cusp of an exciting period of renewable energy growth and development.
What have been the biggest benefits you have seen since ag-based renewable energy became the primary focus of your organization?
The biggest benefit, and has really shown itself to be true in the last 3 or 4 years, is that our local economy has largely escaped the recent recession. That's really because of the strength of the agricultural economy, due in part to renewable ethanol production that helped ameliorate the high imported oil energy costs, which a lot of people believe was really the driver behind the recession. Ethanol production's been the most successful. Wind has had some measure of success with a large project operational. There are a couple other wind projects, though, that are caught in development stages. And causative factors for those probably being that, you know, low natural gas prices are pretty tough competition. And some of the MISO fees, the interconnect fees, are quite prohibitive. So the most likely to develop in the short term just revolves around local businesses, intent on low-cost compressed natural gas as a cleaner fuel and replace diesel fuel in large engines of truck and farm tractors. What's neat about that is we see that as a way to help develop an infrastructure and demand for future renewable natural gas that can come from source, of course, would be anaerobic digestion. And that natural renewable can then be later injected or used for other purposes. Our goal here at the EDC is to help business with projects that are economically feasible and sustainable, and ideally without relying on ongoing government mandates and subsidies. We do realize that there's often really a good place, a critical place and responsibility for assistance from the public sector to provide that environment for developing these alternative energy systems.
What is the primary role of government in moving forward efforts to cultivate a renewable energy industry?
First of all, let me say is when you're supplying energy, and energy comes in many forms, but let's just say we'll just use electricity at this time. When we talk to an electrical distribution co-op, they're looking for a constant source of energy that's predictable. One of the mechanisms that we were talking about was wind energy. Well, the problem is the wind doesn't always blow. So if you combine wind energy with solar cells, of course, when those electrical co-ops need the most energy for perhaps air conditioning use, the solar cells will be producing the most electricity. Also, if you combine that with methane digestion, you can help get rid of part of the problem of animal waste, and you can have methane producing electrical power or being burned directly in lieu of natural gas. You could have the solar cells producing electrical energy, and you can have wind towers producing electrical energy. So you can go to a co-op and you can offer them a constant source of energy. So these are all the type of things that we're working at. Now, when I mentioned that there could be a governmental role, is right now in this country we have, especially in the Midwest, we have very low-priced natural gas at prices that we haven't seen for many years, and they're predicted to be available for some time. And what's happened is this low-priced natural gas has really taken the legs out from under a lot of renewable energy projects. So our country has the option, which can only be done through government, of saying that we can have cheap natural gas for the next 20 or even 50 years, or we can have reasonably priced energy for the next several hundred years. And one of the ways of doing that is mandating a certain use of renewable energy, and thus reducing some of the wholesale demand on the natural gas availability, thus lengthening the supply of the natural gas for many, many times over what it might be available otherwise. Now, we know that our economy is always based on what's most available and what is the lowest price. So that can only be done through governmental mandates, and it remains to be seen whether our elected officials have the political will to go forward with such a project.
Let's talk more about some of the challenges that you have encountered. Are there additional challenges to highlight, and what approaches have you been taking to tackle them?
Well, probably the huge challenge for us here with renewables is the technology required for economically sustainable renewable energy is at the point where it just still is really on the borderline of making sense from an investor point of view, and that many have a wait-and-see attitude. And so there's a reluctance then to hire and pay staff really to investigate some things and spend the time needed to sort through the fluff and to find the proverbial but oft elusive low-hanging fruit. There seems to be another challenge, seems to be a lack of business development and planning sense as well by a good number of the alternative energy developers. They have a technology and an idea and something they really want to move forward, but the key to help facilitate a connection between the people with the ideas and the people who are willing to invest in those things. And that really leads into the funding piece of this, is that's really one of the challenges that renewable energy developers often struggle with.
You know, Catherine, we've run into the food versus fuel argument many times, particularly in the ethanol industry, in which they're using corn, at least right now, as a primary raw material for the production of ethanol. And ethanol nationwide has taken quite a few bushels of corn. And the people that would use corn as a primary ration for livestock, and of course corn prices, because of greater demand, have went up. So and eventually what happens is that's seen by the consumer. And in our country we're used to low food prices, so we're actually working on a system. One of the byproducts of ethanol is something called distiller's grain, and we're working with a chemical engineer on the reconstitution of distiller's grain with corn stover, the biomass left over from corn harvesting, to come up with an edible product for bovine ruminant stomach animals that has the same nutritional value as corn at a far lower price. One of the other areas we're looking at is landfills all over this country ought to be considered a renewable resource and a source of energy. You can use landfills, and they can make energy very favorably and competitively priced. We've looked at that system here in Kennedy, Ojai County, to be able to efficiently burn and do electrical production facility. At a minimum, we're going to harvest the methane that is released by carbon-based products, and we're looking at harvesting that. But some of the challenges are the economic viability. We're fearful that without people being willing to move forward with renewable resources, that we will continue to just burn carbon-based products and use them until they're consumed. And then we'll look around as a country and go, okay, what's next?
Many of the initiatives you've mentioned have demonstrated how you have made Kennedy Ojai County a premier region for growth and development of ag-based renewable energy. Can you tell me a bit about the MinWest Technology Campus and how it has helped to place the region at the leading edge of innovation in the field?
Nobody ranks these. We claim is the country's newest and largest privately owned and operated technopark. To date, they have 30 companies with over 400 employees out there, nearly all of which are in technology or technology-producing fields. It was at one time a regional mental health hospital, and in Minnesota, and I know many other states, the delivery of mental health systems has went from what was at one time called institutionalization to more of a group home concept. That made this 114-acre, 550,000 square feet of building space facility expendable for the state of Minnesota. We were very fortunate that we had a couple of high-tech local companies that desperately needed to expand. So what we were able to do is get the high-tech companies to move into this. We've been recruiting other high-tech companies. Since we're an ag-based area, if you want to start a business, you have to have access to market, and you have to have access to raw materials. You have to have access to intellectual property, and you have to have access to the technicians that can make the difference in the implementation of that intellectual property. Because we're ag-based, we have the access to the raw materials and the access to the markets. We're only 2 hours from Minneapolis-St. Paul, so we have access to their markets, which then reaches out to global markets should we wish. So what's happened is some of these companies have found it to be economically viable to look at renewable resources as a source of new products, which of course would be sources of new profits for them. Candiohi County is one of the leading producers and processors of turkey as a form of white meat in the entire country. So what these companies have been looking at is a way of consuming, or shall we say, burning of the turkey litter as a source of raw material for the creation of heat, whether it be heating their turkey barns as using the turkey litter as in lieu of natural gas or propane, or perhaps even for the production of electricity on a small scale on a farm-based material, which has applications throughout the whole Midwest and rural areas throughout the country. I can't say that we're ready to go into sale with those products yet, but I know that we're working on it.
How has your partnership with local government staff affected your efforts in cultivating an ag-based renewable energy industry? What strategies have you taken to maintain an effective working relationship? And can you speak about any benefits and challenges?
Well, the EDC staff has regular scheduled meetings with local government staff and also collaborates with them whenever something of interest comes to our attention. That has helped create a rapport with them and an easier working relationship. For instance, if a company is looking to expand in the area and we're looking for some available land with particular amenities such as rail siding, you know, natural gas, you know, sewer and water, those types of things, distance from people, we can work with them on that ahead of time to help the companies come in. We also, all of the EDC staff are on several committees outside the EDC. And what's interesting about that is that it very often has connections back into our local government and the people that are working with them. Of course, some people will always want the credit for themselves, but we found that we can probably get much more done if we don't really care who gets the credit. So we really strive to work together with our local government.
Catherine, Lee mentioned it earlier, and unfortunately, moving new technology forward, there's going to be some failures. But most government people don't want to be involved with any failure, because what it really does is it focuses undue attention on them. And people, they usually don't get credit for the successes that they might be involved in. But I can guarantee you when something doesn't work and if it's deemed to be a failure, people will look for somebody to blame. And most government people just don't want to be in that glare when it's a negative publicity, which happens all too often. So they find it's easier just to go with the sure things. And unfortunately, in expansion of the renewable resources arena, that doesn't always fit. So you have to either have the courage yourself and the ability to lobby or to create an environment in which growth can happen, or you have to be able to say, well, we'll take the negative attention if it comes that way. One of the things that we've worked on is with local zoning officials, especially in the rural areas, is identifying areas where renewable resource projects can happen and try to maintain those areas from just regular growth and save those for the growth of renewable resource projects. You can pre-zone certain areas. You can eliminate some of the big conflicts that can develop later. So we've done that. The other thing that we've done is educated our board and, of course, the county boards and the communities within the county of what we're trying to do in renewable resources and alert them to the fact that there's going to be some setbacks and that we'll try and minimize those setbacks. We'll work with them in advance and let them know exactly what's going on using the no surprise theory, and that's worked out fairly effective for us. But I would like to be able to say everything that we've sallied forth on has worked favorably, but that's not the case. So fortunately that we've also had a board that's allowed us to stub our toe once in a while, as long as we have some successes to kind of balance things out.
What types of projects or initiatives are you currently working on to promote the ag-based renewable energy industry in Kandiyohi County?
If you want growth to happen, you first create the environment in which growth can happen. You look for the good opportunities, and then you eliminate the obstacles, which is really what farming is all about. And then the great harvest in the fall is a result of the good work that was done beforehand. We're trying to create an environment where we have the academic sector locally between the University of Minnesota, the Mid-Central Research and Outreach Center. We have some local strong businesses in the private capital arena. We have a facility that is one of the leading techno parks in the entire country. We're creating a ag finance venture capital group. In agriculture, there's a great deal of money these days, and people know the renewable arena. So what we're also doing is this fall now, we're sponsoring a venture capital forum in the biosciences and renewable resources and in the agri-sciences, animal sciences, where we're bringing together inventors, entrepreneurs, and venture capitalists. And so we're trying to create that environment in which the type of growth can happen, and we're trying to have the place that will inspire that type of growth to happen. We're also working in all of West Central Minnesota. Lee would tell you that we've started a movement at the state capitol where we're trying to put together an 18-county renewable resources zone, giving economic incentives for companies to locate in our geographic area.
Lastly, what advice can you offer to small and rural communities interested in cultivating their renewable energy industry to meet economic development goals?
Well, I would offer to them that there are many ways to make something happen if they really want to make it happen. But first, I would recommend to begin with the end in mind. They should ask if economical sustainability and profitability is what they want to cultivate, or, you know, if renewable energy is the end in itself. And then, of course, how much the community is willing to subsidize that industry. Steve mentioned the preparing for seeds, and that really is such a good analogy because it takes some cultivation and preparation. And cultivating is a lot of times thought of as coming after the planting and after some growth has occurred, but it can also mean preparing that proper place for those seeds to be placed in the proper environment. Communities should be realistic about that. Another thing really is to determine whether funding sources are in place and management expertise, is that available? The idea guys don't necessarily have the management expertise and vice versa. Do they have feedstock contracts signed? You know, are there agreements to take the products after the project has come to completion? But it's hard work, and a lot of times assumptions need to be made. Of course, only time will tell if some of those assumptions were correct. Find good people. and be willing to investigate and educate and then just move forward.
It starts, Catherine, with political will. It isn't always going to be profitable right now. It isn't always going to be popular right now. Do people have the political will to make the tougher decisions and also to go out and sell their electorate that this is a good course of action? So if you're representing different political jurisdictions around this country, and if people are interested in becoming active in renewable resources, you need to let the world know. Have your local jurisdictions, particularly a county-based, pass a resolution, as we did, that all new forms of energy utilization by 2025 will come from renewable resource applications. So this is a statement made by your local jurisdiction that you're willing to do as necessary to promote this and to develop the renewable resource arena. If you can do that, then the other things all follow in place, depending on what level that the local jurisdiction is willing to commit to renewable resources.
Stephen Lee, thanks for your insightful advice and for sharing your community's story. Best of luck to you in your future efforts.
Thank you, Catherine. It's been our pleasure, and best wishes to you, too.
This podcast was produced in support of a capacity building and technical assistance program to assist grantees of the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency fiscal year 2010 and 2011 grant programs related to the Partnership for Sustainable Communities. ICMA is a subcontractor to the National Association of Development Organizations Research Foundation under this program.
This has been an ICMA Sustainable Communities podcast. For more information about ICMA's Sustainable Communities Initiative, visit icma.org.